of you out there in Radio Land, you're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your device is locked onto our website, kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the unique personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington special. The COVID crisis has changed our lives dramatically. We haven't been inside our studio for an entire year. With an abundance of caution, most of us cannot use our studio equipment to record our shows. Individual DJs can creep into the studio and do their shows in solitary confinement. But those of us who have real live guests on their shows are not able to invite them to the studio to record. Needless to say, that changes the game. We do have a technological workaround where we create and record the show without even visiting KPTZ's world headquarters in a sweet little trailer in the parking lot of the Mountain View School. Admittedly, our audio quality is not up to our usual standards, but the show must go on. So please bear with us if the sound quality isn't quite what we usually deliver. Consider the content. The purpose of Our Town is to share the stories of some of the fascinating people who make up our community. But the show's only a half hour long, which is definitely not long enough to do justice to some of our fellow citizens. So it's a synopsis. We try to get our guests to talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the northwestern edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca, right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and baristas, the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otter, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. The past year has brought some remarkable changes to our lives. Most of us have literally been in lockdown for a year. When did you last go to see a movie at the Rose Theater? When did you last go out for dinner with friends? We are all impatiently waiting for our vaccinations, hoping for a return to normal. Gee, wouldn't it be delightful to get together with friends and family? We live in a town full of mass strangers. They're probably just regular folks, but you can't be sure. One way to meet some interesting people is to listen to a show like Our Town. Our guests have interesting tales to tell. Today's guest is Daniel Evans, who's the race boss for the Maritime Center. Yes, there are going to be races this year, and we'll get to that. But first, let's get to know Daniel a bit. So welcome to the show, Daniel. My first question is always the same. Are you a local boy born and bred in Jefferson County?
Well, Marianne, thanks for having me on the show. First and foremost, it's really excited to be part of the show. And I am a transplant, like a lot of people in Port Townsend. I'm originally from Alaska, grew up in Anchorage, though ended up working a lot around coastal Alaska.
Where'd you go to high school?
I went to high school in the first high school ever founded in Anchorage, which is West Anchorage High. Go Eagles.
Okay. Go Eagles, of course. What did your peers think of you? What did they think of you? Did they think you were a nerd, a jock? What?
That's funny. I was a bit of a jock. Sports were always kind of my jam in high school. I was always chomping at the bit to discover what this world was really like. Alaska is wonderful. It's also very isolating. I would say it's hard to say what peers may have thought of me. I was voted most radical in my school my senior year, so that might be some indication of what they thought about me.
Well, you know, I grew up in a small town too, although not in Alaska, and I know I wanted to get out of town. What did you think?
There's the curious thing growing up in Alaska before cell phones and cable television that we were Americans, but I had no idea really what that meant. I didn't know what America really was. It was very isolating up there. And so when I graduated high school, the first thing I felt like compelled to do was to try and discover some of that. So I hopped in a truck and drove down the Alcan, the Alaskan Canadian Highway, bought a Harley in Washington State, and just spent some time going around the country trying to figure out what being American really was.
Wow, that must have been a real eye-opener.
It was the people that were the best. I think, you know, I've always been attracted to stories in general, and people's stories are always so unique. Everyone, no matter what kind of walk of life they're in, have these tremendous moments about them. I got to see what people were like in big cities. I got to see what people were like when I broke down in Southern California. People who would let me stay in cabins for free because they just liked the idea of the connection with someone. It was kind of I went to Disneyland, which was a mind blow. And so I got to see what kind of that part of America was like. It helped me understand that Alaska was a lot different from the rest of the United States, but not as much different from the Pacific Northwest. And I gravitated to the Pacific Northwest in the end. I went to college down at Evergreen in Olympia. Go Gooey Ducks. There we go. Eagles and Gooey Ducks.
Okay.
And kind of established what I was always into, the outdoors, climbing. I started rock climbing at an early age, mountaineering, skiing. My grandparents were sailors in Washington State. So I found this gravitation to Washington State, began my career as a professional mariner and an educator here in Washington.
What did you study in school?
Evergreen is known for having degrees that don't help a lot in the rest of your life monetarily, but they're really good helping you be a better person. I studied some botany, some ecology, but a lot of focus on learning about culture through literature.
What was your first full-time job after you got out of school?
The first job that really had a strong alignment with a lot of my beliefs was working for an outfit called Outward Bound. And they do experiential education through adventure. I became an instructor for them actually up in Anacortes and in the mountains in the North Cascades. And so I ran students on these month-long trips, 12 days at sea, 16 days in the mountains, on these old vessels. They were replicas of like the ship's launches that our explorers in this region used, Peter Puget, George Vancouver. They're open boats, hold 14 people. They had oars, sails, no engines. And we would travel between Anacortes all the way up to Nanaimo, essentially in the southern Gulf Islands.
Who would go on these trips? What sort of people?
A lot of people think of Outward Bound as being a kind of a youth at risk program, but it wasn't that much. I worked with a lot of youth in that 16 to 18 year range. And then these longer trips were that 18 to 24 year range. There were adult trips. There was even a whole selection of trips that were called professional development that corporations would come, like Starbucks or Washington Mutual.
That sounds amazing. Now, were the trips generally back to back, or were there big gaps in there?
They were pretty much back to back. So when I worked for Outward Bound, I would work throughout the summer. If I was doing the month-long trips, I'd only do four of them. There were one right after the other. And they were bookmarked by either me ending school or starting a new year of school. I continued to do it after college. And that is my glorious dirtbag years, where I essentially lived out of my Subaru station wagon. I would do these back-to-back Outward Bound trips, go off in my car and go rock climbing. I'd spend the winter rock climbing and skiing and doing the occasional boat delivery for a little extra money. Captains would call me and I would help deliver boats up and down the West Coast.
Okay. And what did you move to after Outward Bound, or why did you decide to leave Outward Bound?
Yeah, I left Outward Bound because there was a lot of change up in Outward Bound. They ended up breaking up. I was with Outward Bound for about 12 years, and I worked out of three different base camps. I ended up on the East Coast with the Thompson Island Outward Bound. I had friends that encouraged me to get into larger ships. I had this old friend, Simon Colley, who encouraged me to get onto schooners. I started operating schooners, and that took me kind of all over the Caribbean, up and down the East Coast, the West Coast, the Bahamas, Bermuda, and that just kind of grew into a more and more of a maritime. I ended up moving out of education, and I ended up working, say, for Cruise West, and I ran cruise ships in Alaska and Mexico for them, primarily as a chief mate, but always returned to kind of the big love, which was educational tall ship vessels. Sailing's always been kind of my jam.
And at some point, you became involved with the Adventurous, right?
Yeah, the Adventurous, for those who don't know, it is the environmental tall ship of Washington State. It's a 135-foot, over 100-year-old, two-masted gaff rig schooner that does educational sails throughout Puget Sound and some of the other rest of the Salish Sea. And I became captain of them. They do educational sails, a tremendous community. I'd always wanted to serve on board her and got to work with them for 5 years. And it was wonderful. It was wonderful sailing.
When you're with the crew of the Adventurous, do you basically live on board?
Yeah, the crew will live on board for upwards to 4 months at a time. I switched off the captain role. I was 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. For a couple of years, I did this 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off with Adventurous. Then I would go for the winter down to the Bahamas. And I ran another schooner down there doing week-long kind of passenger sails where we would just go adventuring, find out what kind of trouble we could get into, go snorkeling, sailing, run around on the islands. And so it was a nice mix for like 3 years. And then I came more full-time onto Adventurous and started helping with the winter maintenance projects, the restoration projects.
I actually went out for a day-long little trip on the Adventurous a few years back. And it struck me that the quarters weren't all that comfortable.
Yeah, it was the last tall ship I'd served on, you know, up until now. And it had the smallest accommodations for crew and captain that I had ever been on. I went from having aft deck cabin that was all my own, which I had a head, you know, a bathroom and everything I needed. Adventurous, which is very community-based. And that's why I was really into it. They are very much about kind of celebrating community, but that means that you're sleeping on top of each other. And the only thing that separated my cabin from the rest of the ship was a very poorly insulated louvered wood door.
Well, I saw some basically what I would call shelves that people were sleeping on.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of. Yeah. Bunk bed style shelves that all the crew got to sleep on and passengers during the
overnight. I don't know. I think I'm too much of a princess for that, but I think some people would really love it, you know? So how did you go from the Adventurous to the Maritime Center, or was there something else in between?
As I was working through different educational organizations, learning and growing, I moved from Outward Bound and spent a little time as the education program director for the Wooden Boat Foundation. And some people who've been around here may know it. The Wooden Boat Foundation is what became the educational programs for the Northwest Maritime Center. It was in the Cupola House in Point Hudson in Port Townsend. And we ran a lot of good programs there. It was then that I ended up living with a dear friend of mine, Jake Beatty, and his, at the time, new girlfriend, who has become his wife. Now, Jake is the executive director of the Northwest Maritime Center. In 2014, we literally ran across each other, getting lunch downtown. He said, you know, this idea I have about this race to Alaska. And I'm like, it is the best, worst idea I've ever heard. And he said, yeah, it really is. And I want you to come on board and make this happen with me. And I said, I'm in, because I'm into bad ideas. I love the experience of life. I think that's compelled me a lot. And this too felt like an uncharted ground to really celebrate something that was in our culture that just doesn't get a lot of prominence anymore, which is what I kind of call like the uncommon hero, but it's that story in all of us. And this seemed audacious enough to do that.
So that was in 2014 that you agreed to come on board, right? And yeah. It must have taken you a little while to take this crazy idea and turn it into reality. When was the first race actually performed?
Well, it was performed in 2015. So there wasn't a lot of time between one and the other. Admittedly, you know, the idea was already out there. Jake had been forming the idea. I think there was a website. The website may have been up in kind of a rough form. And we needed to establish kind of the structure of the race, the actual get, you know, racers in. We literally thought, you know, I was the pessimist. I thought maybe three teams would show up. Jake was the optimist. He said like six, maybe eight. We talked about having chili for him beforehand. And in the end, there were 44 teams that first year that signed up to go all the way to Alaska, and another 22 that signed up to do the first leg that I call the proving ground between here and Victoria. So 66 teams signed up.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So I want to interject a spoiler alert here.
Yeah.
In 2020, all the races were canceled due to the pandemic. Now, in the spring of 2021, it looks like some of the races will be going this year. However, the race to Alaska itself is probably going to be postponed yet again. The main reason is the fact that the Canadian-US border remains closed. There's literally no way to get from Washington State to Alaska on a tiny boat or even on a stand-up paddleboard without somehow touching down in Canada. So we're going to talk about the concept of the race to Alaska. Then we're going to talk about something more fun, two races that look like they will almost certainly be happening this summer. Okay, let's talk about R2AK, which stands for Race to Alaska, 750 miles from Port Townsend to Ketchikan. Pretty crazy idea. So give us a little bit of detail how it's even evolved from that very first race in 2015.
The big evolution is in the thought process of the racers. You know, that first year was, can it be done? In the following years is, how can it be done? You'll see racers who maybe the first year completed it, the next year are thinking about, can they do it solo? They're finding ways to challenge themselves. For Race to Alaska, first prize is $10,000. Second prize is a kind of middle of the road set of steak knives. And after that, it's anything goes. And so the race has always been about kind of personal challenge. As the years add up, people have been finding different ways to challenge themselves in the race. And while some people can do it, in the fastest time has been 3 days, 20 hours, but the final finisher has been in over 24 days. And so there's a level of satisfaction for both of those teams in that finishing. And that's always been there.
There must be some rules for the race. Well, first of all, there's no engines. That's one.
The rules are fairly simple. There's no engines. There's no outside pre-planned support. You can lose crew, but you can't add crew. That is essentially it.
Well, what about the safety precautions that you guys put in place?
I oftentimes say it's an unsupported race, but it's not unsupervised. And so teams are left of their own device to get to Ketchikan. There's two waypoints they have to go through. One at Seymour Narrows, about halfway up Vancouver Island, and the other one going by the town of Bella Bella. While they're on their own out there, I require them all to carry a tracker. It's a spot tracker. It goes to a map that anyone can view 24 hours a day to kind of interact, see where the teams are, and watch their social media and be part of that story. I use that for safety as well. And then I work very closely with the Coast Guard agencies and search and rescue agencies up and down the coast to keep track of all of the teams, monitor weather and other things. And one of the small ones that people don't often realize is that I also work with the ham radio networks that go up the coast, and they get kind of daily bulletins about what's going on. They report back to boats they've seen. So I try to have many layers of communication. So if I need to respond to a vessel, you know, a race team that I haven't heard of for a day or whatnot, then I can.
Okay. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. The show's called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. Our Town profiles some of the amazing people who live and work on the Olympic Peninsula. Today, my guest, Daniel Evans, the race boss for the Maritime Center. We're just talking about the original race, the Race to Alaska, and the trackers. The interesting thing about the trackers is you, me, and anyone can follow your team or boat of choice. So how do you do that, Daniel, if you want to watch what's happening?
It's one of the precepts, I'd say, of all the races, is that everything's free to everyone. If they want to follow, they want to interact. So we'll put up on the website for people to click to, there'll be a map that they can just click on and they can track the teams. We try and integrate our social media. For Race to Alaska, we put out a written daily update. We do a daily clip of the day, which is a pretty refined video clip of what's going on, telling the stories of the racers. And then we do podcasts so that there's a bunch of different ways that people can follow the race. But the tracker's gold because it's just 24 hours a day. You can see where people are going, what they've been doing. And if they've posted or we've posted on social media, then they can kind of keep track of that as well.
Okay, well, there have been some crowd pleasers. Sails Like a Girl was an all-female team, and they actually won in what year was it?
They took it in 2018, and they did it in a monohull, so just a single-hulled vessel, which people said would never be done.
Yeah, and what about stand-up paddleboards? That story about the guy who made it all the way up there is quite amazing.
The myth, the legend, and the man, Carl Kruger, his board broke on 1 year. The next year, he completed the race. It's the world record for the longest race completed by a stand-up paddleboard. And better yet, he helped me create what I fondly call the Race to Alaska Stand-Up Paddleboard Wall of Shame, which is the 16 teams that he beat on his stand-up paddleboard.
It's amazing. How did he survive? What did he eat?
He trained for this. He is beyond a serious adventurer. He's a serious athlete. He's an expert sailor. He developed with Hammer Nutrition a small little wafer. He ate one of those every 15 minutes that was calculated to his exact caloric intake while exercising. And then in the evenings and the mornings, he would drink a rescue shake. He would get his water off the land. He would pull into little dribbles that were coming off the cliffs or the shores and fill up his water.
Amazing guy, amazing story. But you know, doing a race like this is a really serious commitment. I mean, 750 miles, that's a lot. Not everyone can afford the time, the money, all of this. So tell us the evolution about why you started the 7048 and what it is.
Recognizing Alaska was meeting a lot of what we wanted to do, the accessibility and getting people who aren't normally like big elite racers out racing. We recognized, like you said, the money and time. So one of the ideas that came up with a guy named Dean Burke out of Tacoma, who raced leg one and raced to Alaska, was we did something between our two cities. So that was shorter in time frame, but equally a challenge. And it took a while to figure out what that really looked like, but it came down to human power. And so 7048 describes the mileage, 70 miles, and the time limit, 48 hours. And so we invited anyone under human power to come race from Tacoma to Port Townsend. And the race happens right before the Race to Alaska. So we're able to bring all the racers together in a big celebration. That's a party we normally call in non-COVID times, the ruckus.
What year did the 7048 launch?
7048 launched in 2018. It's run for 2 years and it's about 125 teams show up.
Right now, registration is open for the 7048, right? Yeah. And how many teams do you have at the moment?
We have a lot of teams at this stage, which is going to make the person that helps me do all the safety spreadsheets a little bit nervous because it's a lot of information. But we have 117 teams now, about 169 people, and more people are coming in. Registration to apply, you can apply up until what used to be tax day, the 15th of April. So we have some more time for people to apply. And that's the same for our new race too.
When is the 7048 supposed to launch this year? What date?
It's going to launch out of Tacoma and the Theophos Waterway on the 4th of June. It will finish the day before our new race, Washington 360, which starts on the 7th.
Okay, before we get to the Washington 360, just quickly tell us what your reward system is for the 7048. It's quite different than what goes on for the R2AK.
Yeah, I think it's really fun. Every team that joins, they kick in $100 to the kitty, and I break that kitty up into a couple different pots. I make classes after teams have come together. There's a first place prize, but then the last time we ran it, we did classes that were the first team that was facing forward, the first who was solo, and the first that faced aft while racing. And then we do a random hero award, which is the Mustang Random Hero Award, but it's all the teams who finish, their names go into a pot, we pull a name out, and they win a part of that prize, plus a Mustang dry suit.
Okay, cool. So tell us about the brand new race, which again, we hope to be doing this summer.
So I call it Washington 360. It's something that we can run in COVID times. It's kind of a response to tired of waiting, wanting to take back control of what we're doing. And it is a 360-mile race, much like Race to Alaska. It's engineless, but you can keep your engine in your vessel. We just tag it out. It starts in Port Townsend. The waypoints, you have to go down to Olympia. Then you have to go up to just inside Deception Pass by Hope Island, up to Bellingham, all the way up to the little known Point Roberts, which is US territory on the north side of the Strait of Georgia, hemmed in by Canada, and then back down to Port Townsend. It's a 2-week time limit, and we have 3 classes for it.
And the classes are?
The classes are self-selected. The teams get to pick which class they want to be in. It's go fast if you really think you're a racer. Go hard, because those are like cruisers or people who live on their boats. They have to work a lot harder to get their boats to go fast. So there's the go hard, and then human powered, all human powered. We lump into one category.
Okay. And that one is scheduled to launch when?
The 7th of June. That's going to launch in Port Townsend off the Northwest Maritime Center dock.
Okay. Now, earlier you referred to this as a trilogy of adventure races. So how can people find out more? Where do they go?
To find out more about all of these races, you can go to nwmaritime.org. That's the Northwest Maritime Center website. You can also go to r2ak.com or 7048.com. So we have a lot of ways that you can find out about these three races.
Okay, cool. Now, in previous years, there's been what you briefly referred to earlier, the ruckus, or many ruckuses, I suppose, but which are parties on the launch and arrival. And right now, we don't know how much of a ruckus will be happening this year.
Right now, we're not trying to create any plans that bring a lot of people together. It just seems like the responsible thing to do no matter what. People are encouraged to come to the finish lines in Port Townsend, the start lines in Tacoma, the start and finish of Washington 360 here in Port Townsend. There'll be something going on, but we're trying not to develop something that really encourages people to hang out together.
Yeah, because we can't tell where we'll be. I mean, right now things look positive for us easing out of the pandemic, but who knows, right?
Yeah, yeah. We wanted to focus on the what's possible now and really make that good.
Yeah, that's good. Listeners, I bet you're all like me and really looking forward to having some races this year. It was a real bummer last summer. So let's hope we have things to cheer on. Daniel, we're basically running out of time. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today has been Daniel Evans, race boss for the Maritime Center, which hopes to run at least two of its adventure races this summer. Thank you, Daniel. And in addition to thanking Daniel for being a guest on the show, I also want to thank my partner, John McPherson, editor and producer of Our Town. He usually sits in a glass booth with microphones, computers, and lots of other stuff. Not today. He's not even inside the locked fortress of a studio. He's miles away. But he will technologically massage and distill what we are saying so that we sound ever so much more intelligent and more eloquent than we really are. With vaccinations now well underway, we're anxious to return to our studio in the relatively near future. Hopefully our sound quality will improve. We want to thank you, the listener, for sticking with us through the era of COVID. We're all trying to make it through this crisis together. KPTZ 91.9 Port Townsend is a community radio station. Everyone who works here is a volunteer. We give our time because we all believe Jefferson County needs a free local voice. We need you, dear listener. We need volunteers. We also need more donations to stay afloat. We have bills to pay like everyone else. Just like you, all of us at KPTZ would really like to return to some form of normal. Having races this summer is a healthy step forward, and I'm really happy to cheer on the Maritime Center. And I haven't yet picked my favorite team, but I will. Well, that's not true. I have some friends who are racing in the 7048, and I always root for them. So that's it. I'm signing off for today. Please keep listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.